Welcome to Continued Success. It's a disgusting Friday in August, and we're here to talk a bit about the Phillies and their new-look roster that debuted on Thursday evening. I'm Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz.
Yo.
So, the Phillies, by a wide consensus, and we'll talk about the general impressions of what the Phillies did at the trade deadline a little later, but general consensus is they did themselves a lot of favors, and they got a lot of people to give them good grades. I gave them an A. So how do you feel? What's your favorite part of what the Phillies did at the trade deadline? Because, you know, this was a plan with a couple of parts. They addressed a bunch of things that they needed to. What is your favorite thing about how the Phillies improved?
Logically, it's definitely Brandon Marsh. Like, I can find a reason for all three of the moves, like at the deadline, to be my favorite thing. Like, I love the Brandon Marsh move just because it actually fulfilled a need the Phillies have had. Like, the center fielder has not really delivered a ton with the bat this year. So having a defensive guy in there is like, it's like an actual improvement. It's something they haven't had for years. So I'm super thrilled about that. Getting David Robertson back also could be my favorite because I really love that he's back. And he actually talked to Megan Montemiro last month about wanting to come back. But I think my favorite might be the 15 minutes before the deadline. Noah Syndergaard. The Angels just called and said, will you take him, please? I think that might be my favorite just because of the sheer... I guess we're doing this then. Attitude about it,
and just took all. Now I don't have an answer. You took all three as your favorite.
We're gonna consider this makeup for the amount of times that you have taken my thing on Hidden Season, and that I've had to change and not even tell you that I've changed.
I know, that's why.
Three quarters of the time I don't even say anything. Well, Justin, you took my
thing. That's why I like when John lets me go first, because I know. It's the added bonus of knowing
it. He always does that. I'm just like, God damn it. Now I've got to think of something new in 5 seconds.
Do you not come up with two separate ideas in case that happens? I thought you were better than that, Liz, honestly.
It's usually, I would say it's a Sunday night, but we almost never record on Sunday nights anymore. It's a Monday night after normally I've been grocery shopping. So I've sort of like at that point when I've come home from that, after I've put the groceries back wherever I thought they belonged, like my brain is sort of, I've checked out. I'm good for one answer. I'm good for one answer. Two is a stretch.
Well, while you were talking, I realized there are other things I can say. And that is that with the addition of those three players, you also got the subtraction of Jairus Familia and Odubel Herrera, mm-hmm. both of whom leaving is probably not as valuable a move as the other three guys coming in. But certainly... corrections have been made. It feels like everywhere that people wanted them to address, they addressed. And, you know, you're going to get hit with the, well, we acquired a guy who can't hit to play center. And you're going to get hit with, well, we acquired a 37-year-old relief pitcher for a prospect. And Noah Syndergaard's velocity's dropped off. And he's part of a 6-man rotation in Anaheim. So he's not going to be ready to pitch for a 5-man rotation. You know, you're going to hear a lot of that shit. And
show me these people.
And that's fine. Yeah, when they're not speaking like a scrunchy-faced weasel like I just did, you know, these are valid points to make about who the Phillies acquired. But it's also, I don't feel like they brought in anybody who you wouldn't have... This was the level of guy they were looking for in all three cases. Level of guy which was proven by what they gave up to get these guys. They didn't give up, I think, before the trade deadline really got underway. I told you and John, they're not going to give up anybody they don't want to give up. And I know that's kind of like an obvious thing to say, but I really felt like they're not going to be on the phone with somebody and kind of have a change of heart. Like, okay, I guess we'll just give up this prospect we wanted to hold on to for this last deal. You know, that didn't happen. I really feel like they made moves that they intended to make with the prospects they intended to use to make them. And I think that's kind of like my favorite part of this is that they went down the checklist and really filled every role. That being said, you know, Syndergaard, I don't think is I mean, I feel like people are going to have to gird their loins a bit about what to expect from Syndergaard. The Phillies needed back of the rotation help, but the back of the rotation is not always, you're not always going to get the best performance. And, you know, just prepare yourself for that, because like I said, it's true. There is velocity not there anymore that used to be there for Syndergaard. And we saw that last night when you got to see the new look Phillies premiere. I was going to say at full strength, I guess, without Bryce. They're not full strength, but with their new pieces all having arrived, Brandon Marsh played in center and Noah Syndergaard got the start. And we saw David Roberts make his re-debut for the Phillies the day before and go 1-2-3 in the ninth to close out a game. So, you know, I mean, all good things. Last night was a little more interesting. You got Reese hit a home run and singled in a run. You had Nick Castellanos with a game-saving assist from the outfield.
Oh, yeah.
You had Alec Bohm with a three-run home run that continued his terrifying pace and should make everyone, you know, continue to make everyone feel good about A, Alec Bohm, B, what the Phillies hitting team is telling its players and the adjustments they're having them make. Bryson Stott also hitting the ball harder. I know he's had a more difficult time racking up the hits, but his approach is just, I think, a very healthy one and is very improved at this point. And that should be reason to be optimistic about Marsh as well, because again, if the hitting comes, it comes, and that'll be great. And he's very young. He's younger than Bryson Stott. So like there's plenty of room between him and his ceiling at the moment. But right now you just needed a center fielder, and they have a center fielder. And I was a little surprised when Matt Gelb said that in Brandon Marsh, the Phillies feel like they have their center fielder for the rest of 2022 and beyond. And I had said repeatedly, the Phillies aren't looking for their center fielder of the future at this trade deadline. Well, apparently they were, and apparently they got him. And I like this deal because A, no one was really talking about it leading up to the trade deadline. You know, I think Marsh's name started popping up a little bit closer to when the deal finally came about, but I don't think this was, his name wasn't on a lot of people's boards, I would say. But then you looked at like what he has and you're like, yeah, I get why this guy's available. And I also get why he is a great fit for the Phillies. I do. Like that mm-hmm. It's a good fit. They needed a center fielder. They needed somebody with speed. They need somebody who could play defense. And then with Edmundo Sosa also coming in from that trade with the Cardinals, they've got some better defense going up the middle, assuming also that, you know, Gene Segura comes back. With Gene Segura being back, like that's pretty solid. That also backhandedly addressed defense, which I don't think a lot of us were super thinking about either, like in general, not just in center field. So, yeah, I mean, every angle you look at this, it's either at worst exactly what they said they'd do. And at best, it's a massive improvement of the roster. And I also just love the new guy grace period. You know, like there's like that Brandon Marsh had a single last night, just like blooped a single into the outfield. Came around. And the applause was noticeably louder, obviously, than like, you know, just anybody hitting a non-run scoring single. You know, you got plenty of patience for exactly one of Noah Syndergaard's starts. Should he let the Nationals score 4 runs in his next start that doesn't end after 5 innings due to rain? You know, you might hear a little bit, but not this time. Dave Robertson doing exactly what he came here to do 2 years ago. Everybody loves it. We can just sit back and enjoy it. The first time Marsh makes a sliding catch in center field, they're going to be all over him. They're going to be, he's going to run, like jog back out, and they're going to applaud him, like, and all the people in this seats near center field. I love it. I love when it's like the shiny new thing period of right after the trade deadline, which in itself is a sensation we haven't really gotten to enjoy for quite some time either. Like, oh, these guys were brought in to make the team better. They can actually make the team better. And like, we might be looking at some new regular Phillies for a couple of years now. Like this is it. It's exciting. This team intends to make the playoffs and they brought in the pieces to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I know Syndergaard, despite, you know, I guess looking bad last night, like 4 runs in 5 innings is kind of what you'd expect for your back end starter, right? Am I wrong?
I didn't think that was crazy, but it was more that, like, okay, he gave up two runs. Phillies came back. They used Bohm's home run. And then he gave up two more runs and made a 5-2 game, a 5-4 game. And then kind of, you know, it's kind of God only knows what would have happened if the rain hadn't come along. You know what I mean?
What's cool is that we don't have.
And that's what that's my conclusion is that, like, great, easy win. Over. Easy fucking win. Doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, because your back end starter is supposed to give you 5-6 innings, maybe. And he's supposed to keep the game within reach. Like, the Phillies have not downgraded anywhere. And you would imagine that that's, you know, the point for the trade deadline. But that has not actually been the case over the last few years. They've added guys that once they get started, they have not added anything. They have subtracted from the Phillies. And it's nice to see, like, guys immediately, like, adding value. You know, like, Didi Gregorius is gone. He had a couple of slick defensive plays over the last week. He was fine, but I'm also glad to see him gone because it makes everything clearer. This is the trade deadline that we've wanted the team to have for years. 5 years, 6 years. This is the trade deadline we've wanted them to have, where they actually check the box next to every single one of their needs. Like, even with center field, like, they haven't given up anything on the field to get him. Like, they're going to lose Odubel Herrera, who sucks. You know, Brandon Marsh is not great with the bat, so anything he adds with that is just a plus. With the lineup hitting the way it has been and with Bryce Harper on his way back, like, it's such a huge value add overall. Like, the team is actually better. It's actually better, and I guess I didn't expect that it's weird to say, but like I said, the last couple of years, their trade deadline acquisitions have been awful. They've just not worked well. Like, Kyle Gibson, who was acquired last year at the trade deadline, I believe, has been fine. Like, he's a good back end guy. But, like, beyond that, like, I think most of the guys they've added at the deadline have crippled the team in one way or another. And that's not the case right now. And that feels really good to see a Phillies front office competently getting players at the deadline. Our bar is so low, and yet it feels like such a huge accomplishment for this team, as we've said, is not normal ever.
Yeah, I would say it almost goes without saying that this is the first year that the trade deadline acquisitions have really injected some energy alone. Like, before, you know, we're one day into seeing what everybody can do here. And, you know, just that alone of being like, yeah, no, these guys can theoretically help the team, certainly address some areas of need for them. And I mean, if you look at the rotation, it's like Wheeler and Nola, you expect, all right, you got to give me a good game. And you're capable of doing that. And then I feel like at number three, and maybe you have a different characterization of this, I don't know who is formally classified like 1 through 5, but in my head, it's like the two of them. And then you have Suarez, who's like, he can, you know, he can give you a good game. He might stumble, but like, he can typically, you know, he's put some impressive starts together. And then Gibson, I feel like he'll get shelled every once in a while, but again, he's shown he can go deep. And like Syndergaard, I put him like there as well. And like, that's a rotation. That's not the best rotation in Major League Baseball, but that's a rotation that can get you to the playoffs. You know, that's
exactly.
Yeah. And that's all.
It's a rotation that has potential. Like, we know what Syndergaard can deliver, good starts. We've seen him do it on other teams. Like, we've seen Gibson do it for us. We've seen Suarez do it for us. Like, that's kind of why you take these guys. They might not be great all the time, but they always have the potential to be amazing.
Yeah. So that's, you know, our impressions are, I feel like we've had some time to absorb what the Phillies did and give, those were our impressions. I mean, I think we fit right in with the largely positive feedback that the Phillies have gotten. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to go through a couple of writers here. Everyone kind of shares our same sentiment, I feel like. There was a guy from Philly Voice who said, well, there's an added angle to this that we're going to go over here that kept surfacing in the national writers' coverage of what the Phillies did to improve their roster at the trade deadline. A guy from Philly Voice said, Philadelphia isn't any closer to beating either the Mets or Braves, but they aren't any worse. And that's honestly like the most negative thing I think I saw written about what the Phillies did. Jim Bowden gave them a B+, same as Liz.
I mean, his opinion is so
valuable. But that's who the Athletic has do these grades after the trade deadline.
David Sampson, give us a David Sampson, give us a letter grade as we're talking about disgraced former GMs.
I think didn't David Murphy and Marcus Hayes they both poo-pooed what the Phillies were doing? They tried to this isn't it or something, like, because the initial.
I mean, they might have, but I honestly don't know that either of those guys actually exist.
Yeah, I didn't
read
any of it, so.
I don't believe the last time I checked, I vaporized David Montgomery. God, David Murphy. I should be stricken from the podcast for saying that. David Murphy. I roasted him in an email not long ago, and from then on, he just hasn't existed to me. So, no opinions.
Well, what Bowden said was, collectively, these moves give the Phillies a much better shot at securing the final NL wildcard berth, but it's not enough to catch the Mets or Braves. Jason Stark said, think about the future of the NL East, where John Middleton's Phillies have blown through the tax threshold and Steve Cohen's Mets have roared through three tax thresholds, but it might just be the Braves who are set up for more profits and glory than either of them. So they were bringing in, yeah, the comparisons to the other two teams in the NL East with whom the Phillies would be contending. And I don't think anybody, I really haven't seen anybody, fan or media person, talking about how this team can go for the division flag. That's just not a thing. Like, they dug too deep a hole. If they had played like this from the start of the year, then yeah, I think they'd be in the thick of it. It would be a three-team race here in the NL East. But they dug themselves a two-month hole where they just really didn't accomplish anything. They just lingered around 500. They didn't have that pop. Joe Girardi wasn't fired yet. And, you know, then he got let go, and suddenly this team became its true self. And they've been on quite a tear ever since. And something to note here, just as we're, like, comparing them to the Braves and Mets, and obviously the Braves are a tremendous team. They do this weird thing where they systematically lock up all their key players into these deals that keep them on the team for a long time. So it gives people the impression that, like, oh yeah, the team that you like right now, that's really good, that team's going to be here for like a long time. So, you know, you should keep watching the team. And people are like, well, I will, because that's really cool and exciting to me, a fan who likes players and the baseball they play and that they're all on the same team, my favorite team. And the Braves are like, yeah, we thought you might like that, so come spend money. And they say, we will. We will come to your ballpark in the middle of the suburbs and we will pay money. It's really hard to get to, but we will go there out to Cobb County and we will spend all of our money. And the Braves say, good. And the people say, good. And it's just weird, you know, weird relationship with the fans that they just want to keep the young, good players they have on their team. It's bizarre to me. Anyway,
I'll just say this. They're all below market deals. Yeah. Pretty much everything they've done are below market deals. And that is a failure at some level of MLB agents to be like, no, do you have any idea how much money they have? Like, what they're giving you is nothing, theoretically. Like, that's to me, like, they've gotten so lucky with some of these deals. And, like, the prescience of saying no to Freddie Freeman and then signing a dude who's pretty much just, you know, just a little, not as good as that, but just slightly a little worse. Like, that's incredible. I hate them so much.
I mean,
it's
that was
really incredible.
The Freeman thing sounded like it was because of his agent, which the agent denies. But, like, clearly there was some kind of snafu there. And
that one I'll put on the Braves for being douchebags. I don't think that's an agent issue.
I'm just saying, the one guy that, like, is the exception to this, hey, let's lock up all these great players we have, is the guy who has famously and more outwardly than any player I've ever seen regretted leaving a team and joining another one, which is also one of the best teams in the National League as well. So that's just very funny to me.
He could get a World Series ring with the Dodgers this year, two in a row, and I think he would still be a bit unhappy.
He would dedicate it to the Braves and Atlanta.
Yeah,
this was for Braves fans. Oh. He would just wear it.
Way to make both Braves and Dodgers fans hate him at once.
Wear a Braves.
Like, he has nowhere to go
now. Wear a Braves hat at the World Series parade and stuff. I could see it.
Oh, I'd pay money for that.
Well, my point is that a lot of national writers still used it as an opportunity to compare the Phillies with the Mets and Braves. But I think the general idea here is that the Phillies are going for a wild card spot. It's where they're at. you know, even, I don't know. Yeah, like I said, maybe if they hadn't started out so slowly, maybe that we'd be having a different conversation. But it's easier than ever to get a wild card spot because there are, you know, there's another one of them. And the Phillies are a team that is in the mix up there. Like they're playing well. They're a bunch of games over 500. They were buyers at the trade deadline. They're right there with the Cardinals and Padres and Brewers and everybody else who's fighting for a spot in that clusterfuck. But the comparisons to Atlanta, you know, that's sticking out to me. So I was like, I don't really feel like the Braves have hammered the Phillies this year when they've gone head to head. And do you know what the Phillies record is against the Braves?
I don't.
They are 6-6 against the mighty Atlanta Braves this year. Here's the funny part. They have 58 runs scored and 57 runs allowed. Like, these teams are basically canceling each other out when they play each other. And remember, that's after the Braves piled up 13 runs on them in that bullpen game. The Phillies pretty much just handed to them. So they were pretty far apart on run scoring until like Wednesday. So don't get me wrong. Again, the Braves are the better team, from the product on the field to how they're systematically locking up all their key players, how a lot of their key players come from their own system, how like you look up and you got to face Spencer Strider, who's like a new guy to the bunch and happens to be incredible young pitcher that happens to wear a Braves uniform.
Damn it.
So, but you know, again, when they've gone head to head, the Phillies have beaten them enough times to not make this one-sided at all. So
that's very encouraging. And I'll say this much. For anyone lamenting any rentals the Phillies might have had, you know the cool thing about guys listed as, you know, quote, rentals? They don't have to be. The Phillies can just sign them. They could just sign them and, like, they are not rentals. Then they're just part of the team for the next several years. Like, the rental idea gives... It's always puzzling to me because as the team that traded for this player, you now have sort of like, you have an inside track to get this player to stay with you. Like the, like Soto with the Padres, he could conceivably sign a pretty big deal to stay there. And he might do it depending on how this year goes. And so no one is a rental unless you want them to be. I hate that terminology.
Yeah. There's like a general assumption that like, oh yeah, well, he'll walk because his deal is up. And it's like, well, if you really want him, then you don't have to let him walk. So, you know, and you mentioned Juan Soto there. Uh-huh. Did you see that? I'm not looking at it right now, but
I was going to ask you the same thing. Did you see that video?
You talked about the video of the owner, the Padres owner, talking about like giving him a $500 million deal.
Oh, no. I was talking about the video of the fans giving him an incredible ovation when he literally just walked out to his spot for the first time. Like, I don't think he's ever heard that type of volume, even when he won the World Series with the Nationals in 2019. Like, that's bonkers.
Well, and that's we can talk about that because that's that's another topic of somehow of debate. I mean, this is a quote from Peter Seidler from an NBC Sports San Diego reporter who ran into him at Petco Park, apparently. And he said, I thank you for doing what you're doing. Maybe he's not a sports reporter because that seems like a weird thing. Yeah, it says he's a reporter for NBC7 Sports Wrap in San Diego, co-host of a Padres podcast. So I feel like it's more.
That's not a report. That's not a beat writer.
No, not
that's
a beat writer.
Just a radio dude. Those guys are allowed to be partisan. That's their job. All right.
And he said,
thank you. This is better.
Thank you for what you're doing. And Seidler turned to him and said, it's the easiest thing in the world for me to do. We're going to win. And you know, yeah, an owner's gonna lean into that, and yeah, this is what we talked. We just bashed that John Middleton article last time. That was just like PR for him. This is what Middleton wants, to be able to like lean into and bask in the glow of appreciation from people. And you know, if this team does well with what they've got, which you know we feel like they certainly have a chance to, and they have improved themselves, then he'll potentially get to do that. He'll get to do what he wants, which is, you know, bask in the love of a city to whom he has quote unquote gifted a really good team. But in this guy's case, the Padres are just on a different level. I mean, There's a reason why Juan Soto got applauded just jogging out to his position, and it's because he's a superstar. He's been, you know, his closest comparison is like Ted Williams. He's still young. Ooh. He's still in his prime for a long time. He's going to be a pillar of Padres baseball, and he's going to play alongside Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis, let alone the litany of at least recognizable stars that exist on the Padres roster at the moment. And they've also indicated, you know, remember when they dealt for Josh Hader at the trade deadline, and everyone lined up to say, well, they're out on Soto. Well, no more Juan Soto for them. Morons? Like, are you kidding me?
What moron? No one with any brains would have said that. The Padres have spent years turning their farm system into a farm system that people want to take from. Whether or not they're highly rated prospects, they have a lot of dudes that are at least rated somewhere as being good. And if you want to win right now, what you do is you just toss them. You just toss them to whatever team is willing to take them for actual good players. Like, because they have so many recognizable stars. And, like, a good farm system isn't going to help them win right now. The only way a good farm system can help you win now is by trading them. And the issue with the Phillies is that they don't have a good farm system yet. They're still struggling to get that type of depth that the Padres have. But they've worked for it. Like, they would be bonkers not to sign him to an extension to play alongside two of the fellow best players in the National League. Not on the Cardinals. I mean, they're such a good team. And despite the fact that they, of course, broke Bryce Harper's thumb, I can't think of another team I'd rather win besides the Phillies than the Padres. Their fans have gone through so much. And it would be awesome to see them win, especially after making so many big moves. They pushed all their chips all in and said, fuck the farm system. We're going in.
And also, fuck the Dodgers. We're going in.
Oh, do it. Kill them. Kill them dead.
I mean, they've been following the Dodgers model of acquiring anyone available who can do something they need for years now. It just has not worked.
Finally beat them.
And I mean, hopefully this is the thing, because this is a higher level player than they've acquired. Even the Padres have acquired. So they've really impacted not just their team, but their entire franchise. As everyone's been saying, that stadium's full every night. People in San Diego are having, like, everyone is doing their best to scream at San Diego baseball fans, like, okay, you know, when you look back and you're like, we took it for granted, we didn't know what we had. You're inside of that time right now. Yeah. Everyone is jealous of you. And they know. Like, there's a reason that park is full. And that's what happens when you go out of your way to build a team that is good and wins and fun. And you show, hey, even if things go wrong, we're going to try to find a way to, like, make the team still be good. And you're not hiding from the Dodgers, or you're not pinching pennies or saying now's not the right time, or that wasn't the right deal for us. You know, that's just cowardly non-baseball shit. It's got nothing to do with baseball and everything to do with business. And people don't come to the ballpark to watch you do business. So what everyone was dunking on this morning was some quotes that appeared in The Athletic. There's three different ones that I'll just read off that were said to Jason Stark. An MLB exec told him, I don't know how they're paying for it. A second exec said, I don't understand San Diego's business model. A third MLB exec said, they've financially committed to building an incredible major league product. That's kind of the answer to the other two, you know, even though they're not questions, they are answers. And as our friend, my editor at Baseball Prospectus, Craig Goldstein said,
I'm sorry, I believe his name is Kronk.
Kronko Tonko said, you know, who fucking cares? Like, in response to, he like tweeted out that article and said, you know, making fun of owners for being like, how are they making money? And it's like, they're making they're doing it with money. Like, they're getting money because people want to come see this baseball team. They're paying the insane costs it takes to go to a Major League Baseball game because they want to, because they're choosing to, because you've made your product so interesting that they want to be down there and fucking a part of it. And Craig got into, like, this really interesting conversation where he was like, yeah, people love to say baseball is a business, and it is, but it's unique in that there is a brand loyalty potential that is absolutely absurd. He was like, I am a Dodgers fan. I have never been on the West Coast for more than a couple of days at a time. I'm a Dodgers fan because my father was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan. That doesn't make any fucking sense, but it's but it's still the case. And, like, look at us doing this. We just spent 10 years doing this podcast. Not 10. We just spent... We just spent a bunch of years doing this podcast, hating the team we were talking about most of the time. This
I spent 7 years editing a website with a team that didn't have a 500 record any year that I was editor of The Good Fight. Not a single year did they have a 500 record, and yet I was there.
And I, you know, it's not like we've never talked about shuttering everything and punting our laptops into the sea, but here we are. Clearly we never fucking did, because, you know, that's that bizarre, insane loyalty that you just get from sports fans when you put a team on the field that lets people, like, create their own personal memories. Like, it's not, we call it a product, but it's not like, you know, a standard widget that you just get handed it and it just stays in your house and maybe you forget about it, maybe you use it, you know, whatever. Baseball, like, this is entertainment. This is this is how people, this is, like, becomes part of people's lives. It changes their lives. The reason we do this podcast is because we became fans of a team that kept getting better and was really good for half a decade, and we were always down at that ballpark. We were always watching the game. We were talking about the Phillies. We got involved in communities about the Phillies. Our careers changed because of what we got into because of those teams, and those paths went in certain directions because of, and these executives talking to Jason Stark, just like, they just still don't fucking get it. And it's not like that began with the Phillies of 2007 to 2011. Teams have been creating lifelong fans for generations. And these owners are just like, well, I don't get it. The money. I don't fucking get it. It's like, you're in business. Isn't this the part you're supposed to be good at if nothing else?
You don't hire AJ Preller if you don't want to make trades. Right? AJ Preller is the GM of that.
Correct.
I know that. Yes. I mean, they're doing what the 2009 through 2011 Phillies did, and I can't begrudge them a single iota just because of that. And their fans, too. Like, their fans have to know, like, this is it. If they're going to win, it's going to be in the next couple of years, and they're going to do it. And if we're lucky, they'll turn into a dynasty. Like, I hope for the best for them. Like, I would love if the Phillies could get there. But, like, to see a team just throw up all of its cards and be like, fuck it. We're doing it. We're going to get everybody who's out there that's good. We're going to push all of our chips into the center of the table, and we're going to do it. Like, I respect a team who's like, we see our chance. We've got amazing players. We have one amazing player that for some reason a team didn't want. And we traded him for prospects that we couldn't care less about.
Just crazy. I mean, I hear that.
And now he's on their team.
The response from, like, Nationals fans, well, you know, he.
Those poor fans.
I mean, he wouldn't have, like, they wouldn't have gotten anywhere, and they would have been paying for it. He's more valuable to them as, like, being traded. And you're like, you just don't want to watch baseball. Like, there's no reason to go to a Nationals baseball game right now. And the exact antithesis of that is that the Padres owner I was talking about, Peter Seidler, he said to the question, would you be put off by a $500 million contract to Juan Soto? And he just leaned into the mic and said, never.
Yes!
I mean, that's Steve Cohen. That's the version of Steve Cohen that we're like, you know, it's not like the Mets are struggling, but, like, that's what we were expecting. Somebody who's just like, I don't fucking care. This is my cool toy that I love. I'm gonna put all this money into it and it's gonna be fucking cool as shit.
That's exactly what I want. Like, owners like Steve Cohen make every other owner scared. And now they're just looking at the Padres owner and being like, oh God, he's one of them. We had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like what the debate now is. Oh, well, you know, we got to. Well, what somebody said in response to Craig was it's not sustainable. And that's the what he responded to and said, who fucking cares? Like, because that's the response. None of this is sustainable.
No! Would any Nationals fan trade the 2019 World Series because it wasn't sustainable? No. We wouldn't trade the 2008 World Series for anything. You win a World Series, you are immortalized forever. The end. That's it. No one could take it away from you, except if you're the Astros.
I mean, the most sustainable thing in baseball, do we not learn this every year, every generation, every time we look back through the history books at franchises that like aren't the most prominent franchises, that aren't the richest franchises, and even them occasionally? Don't we know that the most sustainable thing to do in baseball is fucking suck? There's teams that just, they're famous for sucking. The
Royals.
The Phillies are famous for sucking.
Yes.
The Pirates, the Orioles, the Royals, the Mariners. These teams are famous for how fucking shitty most of their history is.
Diamondbacks?
Yeah. And the reason like that they have fans is because for one precious sliver of a window of time, they slipped into the 2001 World Series. Or
Rockies.
Or the playoffs, like the Pirates. Or like 07, where the Rockies went in against the Red Sox and got all the way to the World Series. And yeah, like the 2-3 year window where the 2015, I guess it was 2015, the Orioles and Royals played in the ALCS. The most interesting and biggest departure from normal ALCS stuff we have seen in probably our adult lives. Like, and that is why they have fans waiting around for them to be good again. Or don't, in the case of the Rockies, where people are just like, I'm turning in my fucking hat. This fucking sucks. There's no hope. This franchise has no interest in winning and has no plan whatsoever.
They're just giving out random contracts now.
That's what that was, right? They locked up a 37-year-old closer, Daniel Bard, to like a 3-year deal. Then their owner in a conversation, I forget it was an owner, but an executive for the Rockies told a reporter, well, you know, they were like, hey, you're the only team that didn't really make a trade at the deadline. And they were like, well, we're the only team that extended a player. And the reporter was like, that is incorrect. Correct. That is wrong. Joe Musgrove was extended by the Padres. Austin Riley was extended by the Braves. What are you talking about? That is just untrue. So I don't think they have any idea what the fuck's going on. Or like
the Rockies.
Like I don't think they know
Rockies
what an
run by failed SAT take.
They're like they just don't know what an extension is. They're just saying words without having any idea what they're meaning. But yeah, so I mean that's the Padres are kind of showing like this is the interest you can drum up because it doesn't matter if they don't win the World Series. Look at the interest they've drummed up by the simple act of, hey, let's spend the money we have to make this a team of incredibly watchable stars who could potentially bring a World Series to this franchise. I mean, that's fucking insane. Are they a team?
You see an opportunity, you go for it. Like, I love that.
And I think that you're seeing a certain amount of that with the Phillies here. Like it's a low, low level, much lower level version of it because they're aiming for a wild card. They've set themselves up to win a wild card, but they did set themselves up. I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged by that. I think the Phillies will usually spend or deal now. I have a little more confidence on that front as well. They went over the luxury tax threshold. They made the right deals this trade deadline. Like they're not just doing stupid shit. They're not hiding behind, you know, locked doors. They're doing what they need to do to make the team competitive and watchable. So, and I like that they're not the team with the biggest spotlight on them. You know, I think that takes some pressure off because I think their biggest pressure on them in the second half is going to be that they have to win every game against the Nationals. CBS Sports talked about how one of the Phillies, like before they even really talked about what the Phillies actually did at the trade deadline, they were like, yeah, in the second half, the Phillies have 11 games against the Nationals who now don't have Juan Soto or Josh Bell. Their two biggest contributors on offense. Now they're just like a bunch of guys who have the same clothes on. And the Phillies, you know, the Phillies have an advantage because they get to play them for 11 games. And the other teams that the Phillies are battling for wild card spots have more difficult schedules. But I think that's now going to put pressure on them to win every one of those 11 games against the Nationals. Because I think people are going to think of them as like, yeah, automatic wins. And as we saw last night,
it's hard to do.
It's not, you know, it's not impossible. Like, that's 11 games. I don't think they will win all 11 of them, but I think the pressure's on to, like, you know, take those games. And I don't care if they end how they did last night, as long as it ends in a win, but it did kind of show you that, like, yeah, you know, look, I don't think the Nationals are good at all, and I don't think they're particularly threatening, but they're still, like, a baseball team. You still have to beat them. They will still score runs on you and make, you know, and the Phillies, have pitchers who will give up hits to them. So that's, I think that's something that's going to be a little minor bit of pressure going into the second half. Like, okay, they have an easy schedule, but you still fucking got to win the games.
I'll say this much. I did not expect, I'm looking at the standings right now just to see which division is going to be like a bigger contest. And I did not expect the Nationals to be the worst team in baseball by like 5 games.
Yeah.
They are absolutely. There is no other team in baseball with less than 40 wins, and they've got 36. That is awful. I am, listen, despite my lifelong or, you know, their existence long hatred of the Nationals, I am so glad that Juan Soto got out. He's a good player and deserves to be on a good team, even if it's a team that challenges the Phillies. Like, despite the fact that the Phillies aren't built to go against a team like the Padres or the Dodgers, I want to see them go head to head, you know, because there's always a chance they could win. It's just a series. It's just a game. And any team can win any game. That's kind of the best part about baseball. Like, any team can win any game at any time, no matter who's pitching, no matter who's hitting. Like, we saw that a couple of years ago. Like, a pitcher could have a terrible day. Just a terrible, uncharacteristic day, and it happens to come in the playoffs, and it ends their playoff hopes, period.
I mean, we saw that 2 weeks ago. The Phillies got swept by the Cubs to start the second half. And then won 2 out of 3 from the Braves, a team that should be able to beat a team that gets swept by the Cubs. So, yeah, there's a little bit of just utter chaos out there as well that can be helpful or unhelpful. But, yeah, I'm encouraged going into the second half with steep a slope I think the Phillies have to a World Series title. I think everyone has kind of set their bar for, okay, you know, make the playoffs. And I think that's what the Phillies have set their bar for. That's what the fans have set their bar for. And that's another sign that, like, yeah, you don't have to be the best fucking team. You just have to be a team that is fun to watch. You have to be a team that you know, doesn't guarantee that a bullpen entering the game is a loss, or that a guy coming up to the plate is an automatic out. Like, a team that cares enough to make the adjustments they need to make to get better. And the Phillies have proven that they are that team, or at least are attempting to be that team. Yes. And that is encouraging enough. Until maybe a year or two goes by, then it won't be enough. Then it will be, we have to win the World Series.
Yeah. I'll say this. I'm looking at the standings in full for the first time. The Phillies are good enough to be tied in it for first place with the Brewers and the Cardinals in the NL Central. The NL Central is garbage.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yes.
I mean, I really, whoever wins that division is honestly like an easy pickoff for a even slightly better team. That's, I did not realize that, and now I'm going to be paying attention to it for the rest of this season. What if we could put Philadelphia in the Central Division?
We could find a way. They made Atlanta a Western Division team for long enough. It doesn't have to make sense.
I mean, gerrymandering exists for a reason, folks. Go. Why can't we use it for a positive purpose, like putting the Philadelphia Phillies in the Central Division?
Well, before we close up, let's talk about one more roster move the Phillies made. Actually, they made one while we were talking by recalling Nick Maton and sending Yairo Munoz down to Lehigh Valley. But also, D.D. Gregorius was released. And I got at, like, was that something you expected? This is a guy who, you know, he had a really good debut season, 2020, you know, obviously a short season, but he hit .284 with an .827 OPS. He provided some slick defense up the middle in his age 30 season in 2020. Since then, it's been a pretty steep decline. He got hurt. He got sick last year. He made comments about what the COVID-19 vaccine did to him that definitely, you know, put a dent in his public image, we can say. He finished last year with a .209 batting average and a .639 OPS. Those numbers did not improve much this year in the playing time he received in his age 32 season. He hit .210 and had a .567 OPS. Took him forever to hit a home run. I mean, he's not like the guy you're relying on to hit home runs, but he had one for the Phillies this year, and I think you were hoping for more than that. Unfortunately, he finished his Phillies career with 999 career hits. They cut him just before he got to 1,000. So,
whew.
I do hope he gets picked up somewhere else so he can get that 1,000th hit. Like, that's going to drive, just from an OCD standpoint, that's going to drive people insane looking at that number and not seeing it turn over to 1,000. But in general, I mean, were you surprised to see Didi Gregorius go at this point?
Like, theoretically, I was. I'm like, he's one of those players that's owed money, and so I assume the Phillies are just going to hold on to him for a while. But, like, they let him go. It was the right decision. You know, that shortened season, I think, gave them an incorrect idea of what he might have been like over a full 162-game season instead of just a 60-game season or whatever that was a few years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't fault the Phillies for re-signing him, because at the time, that's what we all wanted. Like, he did great in this, you know, tiny sample size that was the 2020 season. So,
and we also didn't know who was going to play shortstop at that point. Like, obviously Stott was coming up, but I don't think word was like he was on the cusp of joining the major league roster. All the attention was being paid to re-sign JT Realmuto. And then I feel like, if I'm remembering correctly, then they slipped in the DD re-signing like maybe a couple weeks later. And that was also important because our whole thing back then, I'm now remembering, was that, yeah, they were like pretty good last year. You can kind of just bring the same guys back and hope they don't get hurt this time, and you'll still have a pretty competitive team. And that's where Didi's drop off really impacted the team. And then obviously he got hurt and got sick. So those things didn't help either. I think we're just very accustomed to, like you said, seeing the Phillies protect guys to whom, you know, they don't want to turn it into a huge, they want to see an ROI on guys that they're paying bigger money.
Yeah.
And I think we're used to seeing them, you know, just kind of stick it out with guys who aren't performing well like that. And I think you're also just used to seeing the Joe Girardi approach where it's like, well, I like Didi. He's going to get out there. He's going to play. And that's why there were very real fears about, well, when Gene comes back, who's getting kicked to the curb? I hope it's not the young guy, because just to weave in another current narrative, Mickey Moniak was obviously the Phillies' number one pick. At one point, hopefully some kind of fourth outfielder role could have, you know, after his hot spring this year. And then, of course, he hurt his hand, and we'll always wonder, you know, I wonder what would have happened if he had not hurt his hand and had come into the regular season as hitting as well as he did in the spring. But of course, he was also
a Dom Brown future.
He was also facing spring training pitching, so perhaps that wouldn't have translated anyway. And there's really no reason to assume that it would have, because he's never really looked super comfortable as a major leaguer at the plate. That being said, he's with Anaheim now, being involved in the trade for Noah Syndergaard. He has hit a home run for the Angels, which is something that I was like, oh man, Mickey hits. Can he hit home runs? I don't know. Okay, that's great.
I guess he can.
But he's also like struck out, I think, 3 times in his first 6 at-bats. But my point is that he had a quote that he gave the Associated Press saying, looking back on my time in Philadelphia, I was grateful for it. Being given a chance as an 18-year-old kid, came up with them, debuted with them. But I think that, you know, for me, I've always been a guy that maybe takes a little bit to get comfortable at every level. And once I get comfortable, it's on from there. So it wasn't really I wasn't really given that opportunity there, which makes sense. They're always in a pennant hunt with a lot of money on the field. So just to be here and be told that you're going to go out and play and have some fun is huge. Now, NBC Sports did a write-up on this quote that was trying to frame it like, oh, you know, I disagree. Mickey Moniak's like bashing the Phillies. But this is all very reasonable paragraph of
it's
thoughts.
It's completely reasonable. Yeah. Like, it's completely reasonable. He acknowledged the fact that the Phillies just could not play him every day. They have a lot of money on the field. That's a fact. And they just couldn't sit a guy just to let him play every day. I'm glad. In the same way that when J.P. Crawford got traded to the Mariners, I was like, oh my God, thank God he's been set free.
Yeah.
He could just be himself now and do whatever he's doing. And he's made a huge mark on that team. He's a huge part of that team. I want the same for Mickey Moniak. Like, for any player that the Phillies have picked early and that didn't work out for them, I want him to find success somewhere else, because in a way that will validate the Phillies, you know, their forecast of him, their feeling about him. It's just a huge indictment of their minor league teams and how they develop players and bring them up. But I certainly hope he does well. It seems like it might be more of the same. I'm glad he hit that home run, because at least it gave him a moment of joy at the very beginning.
Yeah, with Mickey, I'm not really convinced that it was just a lack of playing time that that contributed to him not sticking in Philadelphia, but I don't think his point is invalid. I'm sure. Mm-mm. I mean, we've seen time and time. That's what was frustrating about the Girardi era, was that it felt like guys who, you know, needed to the at least the chance to get comfortable at the plate weren't getting those opportunities. You can't drop a 21-year-old into a random at bat a couple times a week and assume he's going to find his stroke in the big leagues. You can't have, you know, same thing like just getting comfortable defensively. Even a guy that's not projected to be a very big major leaguer needs the chance to get comfortable to prove like, okay, this is the real version of me, so that everyone knows what you're dealing with. You know, like that's, you're not going to, if you're not letting a guy get comfortable and be the reaches like something closer to his ceiling, then even if you want to get rid of him, you're not going to get what you want for him. So just giving people the chance to get comfortable, I think, has been a through line for this franchise as well. And that's why I'm looping this into my other point that if, and again, our fears were very real, if the Phillies had gotten Gene Segura back and been like, all right, now Didi's going to play shortstop, it would have been that same story all over again with Bryson Stott. Like, okay, this kid was playing, then he wasn't, now he was, and now he isn't again. Like, you know, what are we doing here? You can't send him back to Lehigh Valley now. He's a big league player. You got to let him, get comfortable and see what he can do. Because again, he was hitting the ball hard, and his line drives and the grounders weren't finding holes. His line drives weren't dropping. Like, you got to give somebody the chance to be the hitter you think they might be, because if you don't do that, then you're doing both them and your club a disservice. And
I seem to recall a player named Alec Bohm that had this exact problem, and now he's hitting the cover off the ball for like a span of time that suggests that this is kind of what he wants to do and likes to do. So, yeah, exactly.
Alec Bohm is the Phillies' best hitter.
Oh, completely. I mean, you could have asked me and Newman John and Chris and Trevor and maybe another 15 other people, and they would not have said Alec Bohm will be the Phillies' best hitter by August.
No.
No. 100% zero. I will admit I did not see that coming ever.
Obviously, Kyle Schwarber has 33 home runs. He's not going off on as quick a pace as he was before, but, you know, that's... He has certainly solidified himself as a key contributor to this offense. Rhys Hoskins hit a home run last night. We know he's hot and cold. He's hot and cold. But I feel like the hot and cold streaks have been maybe a little less dramatic of late. I'm not going to read too much into that because I think he just is the kind of player he is. And you're either on board with that or you're not. So, like, you know, his slash line isn't, you know, his batting average isn't going to blow you out of the water, but it doesn't need to when his OPS is like 815. Like, that's an okay place for him to live. He's got 21 home runs. Obviously, we need to see more from Nick Castellanos. I'm not going to frame that he finally hit a home run into, is this a turn on the corner? Just turn the corner. Yeah. Turn the corner, and let's talk about that he has turned the corner the next time we talk about that. Not, is this the time he's going to? Let's let him do it. I think it's possible. August is his best month historically, so let's see. Maybe. We'll see. Hopefully the same person who was talking to Alec Bohm about making adjustments and Bryson Stott about making adjustments can get in Nick Castellanos' ear as well. JT's hitting a little better lately, but I say all this just to say Alec Bohm, in his age 25 season, is hitting .297. You know, he is doing what we've imagined him being able to do for so long, except now we don't have to imagine it. He's comfortable at the plate. He's swatting line drives. He's hitting the ball hard. And now he's starting to smack home runs, like smack balls out of the ballpark as well, which is a really nice addition to his standard production. So he doesn't need to be the big power bat in your lineup, but anytime he wants to like go down and get them like he did last night, just kind of one-handed backhand that ball out of the stadium. Yeah, you go right ahead.
That's gorgeous.
Young man, that is
gorgeous.
Perfectly acceptable. So yeah, I guess just the overall point being Moniak was not going to be a key contributor here in Philadelphia, but that doesn't mean his point about playing time isn't invalid. Like this, and that is an important change that I think we've seen in this franchise, that finally the young guys, you know, daycare, they're able to contribute because not only did they figure something out, but they also had the time to figure it out. So that is one of the many things that the Phillies are doing right now. They're doing a lot right.
Yeah. When the season is over, we'll have a chance to like fully account for the Girardi era. But I haven't, like, aside from being like, oh my God, he was the Phillies manager once, I've barely thought about him.
Yeah. Same. Not, I really like, have, he has been outside of my head. Not
exactly. Like, we were tortured. We were tortured for like the full season and the 2 months that we got of him. It was really like that first, you know, season that was abbreviated. We really didn't get a good idea, though we did identify some trends that became problematic over time. But like, it's like night and day. I don't think there's a single move that the Phillies have made that have been as effective as that. No matter, regardless of all the guys they've traded for, the moves they've made, the releases, you know, the guys they've DFA'd, I don't think there's a single move that was effective as firing Joe Girardi and putting Rob Thomson in charge. Like, I think this is a team that wants that guy in charge next year because he hasn't led them wrong, really. We haven't had any big, massive, huge complaints about Thomson's, you know, managerial decisions, which is a massive credit to him.
It really is. I mean, you know, people have tried. I know there's I've definitely seen people out there whose goal is to be mm-hmm. the first one to have criticized Rob Thomson. So they're putting criticisms of him out there, like about bullpen usage or batting orders or whatever. So that when,
because
like,
presumably they're members of Joe Girardi's family.
If he like has a big fuck up, they can be like, I've been saying it. I was the first one to say that Rob Thomson's bad. So yeah, there's people just exist like that. It's hilarious. Not a whole lot to complain about with the Phillies right now, which is always a more pleasant show to be able to do. Game two against the Nationals tonight, assuming the rain holds off, which why would you assume that? Not in Washington. They're in Philly. I keep forgetting that. Yeah,
they're in Philly. But the giant storm hit Philly right around the fifth inning last night.
And it didn't stop. So, yeah. Nope. Maybe they get five more innings in. If they want to just play five inning games, keep the bullpen fresh for the rest of the stretch, then yeah, let's just do that. Works for me. I don't care how they win them. Just stack up the wins. As always, thanks for listening to this podcast and all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hittin' Season with John Stolness. We'll have a new episode of The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk this coming week as well, our first episode since the 100th episode spectacular. And as always, head on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Hittin' Season. For $5 a month, you get access to all kinds of bonus content, including Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones and baseball movie reviews with me and Liz. Liz, any final thoughts before we close up?
I mean, it's just watch the Phillies. This is the perfect time of year to actually, like, the last several years, even with the Kyle Gibson addition last year, I reduced my Phillies watching because I'm like, this is not going to help them a whole lot. This year, there's a chance. There's more than a chance. There's, like, a legitimate possibility that the additions that they made at the trade deadline could substantially help them towards making the playoffs. That is the goal. That's what we've been looking for. That's what I want. So watch the Phillies. Take joy in the Phillies while there is joy to take.
It's August 5th, and a lot of the sports scene in Philadelphia is still about the Phillies and not Eagles training camp. Like, it's obviously also about Eagles training camp, but it's not just about Eagles training camp, as it typically has been by this point in the season. So
yep.
They've
got a month.
We're all trying to recapture how we felt the last time the team was good. This is about as close as we've gotten thus far. We'll see what happens next, but it's nice to feel excited to watch a Phillies game in August. It's nice to feel that way again. And my last thing, I'm just going to point you towards something I wrote for Baseball Prospectus on Vin Scully and how he used stories and words and how those things have been devalued and watered down a bit in this era of constant onslaught of media and coverage and commentary. How he was always very purposeful and intelligent storyteller. And I tried to recognize that component of what we lost when we lost Vin Scully. But that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success, and we will talk to you next time on the show whose name I just said, Continued Success.